By the way, we are doing a series, and I want to just make one little note on this. If you picked up the book on this, the Money Series, which you can get also out in the foyer, and if you looked at it this week, you made a discovery, and that is there are some fill-in-the-blanks here, and you're wondering, what do I fill in the blanks? This is really video curriculum material. Our small groups are going to be going through this sometime, each of the groups probably in the next year or so at their discretion. However, on page 109 are all the fill-in-the-blanks. So you can just go right to page 109, fill in what you need, and you're good to go. So just a little word to the sufficient is wise, as my seminary professor used to say. Well, one guy or a couple guys told me a couple weeks ago that their IRA turned into an IR. And then one of those same guys said his IR last week turned into an I. So I related to that in some ways. Let's go to, are we up on the, Spot the Economic Expert is the title of this cartoon. Starting from the left, U.S. Representative Charles Rangel from New York. He helps write our U.S. tax code. He didn't know he had to pay taxes on rental income. That gives you a lot of hope, doesn't it? Next guy, CEO makes multi-million dollar bonus for driving his company into bankruptcy. Third guy has Congress little button on his lapel down here. Passed legislation in the 90s forcing lending institutions to give home loans to unqualified buyers. There's a good sound business practice right there. And then the last guy is Joe Q. Balances family checkbook every month. Who is the financial expert? We are, that's Joe Sixpack's brother. That's correct. You're right on that. All right, let's go to the next slide, John. We are doing a series called Managing Finances God's Way. And today we're looking at materialism, trying to escape materialism. And when I think about this, let's go to the next one, John. Escaping your spending spree. This message might hit home to some, closer than others. And I'm not speaking about my wife.
I wasn't applying it to me.
There you go. 67 days till Christmas. Anybody got their first Christmas catalog in the mail yet? Number one. We've got ours this past week, first Christmas catalogs. They're coming in. You may get more Christmas catalogs this year than you even get offers to give you credit cards from banks. Never know what's going to happen this Christmas. Boy, that would be a surprise, wouldn't it? It's estimated that this year you will have 150,000 choices to choose from just in buying toys. For your kids. 150,000 different toys are going to be sold. Somebody said that for the average American that brings home $1,000 in a pay period, he spends $1,300 during that same pay period. 30% more outgo than income. When you think about outgo, output more than input, I think about several professions. You know, bodybuilders, if they do too much work, they call this overwork. Electricians call it overload. Bankers call it overdraft. And politicians call it what problem? Output more than input? No problem. A few years ago, the New York Times, not known as a conservative bastion of thought, put out a book called The Hunger for More, Searching for Values in an Age of Greed. This is not a Christian book, but it does pose an interesting question. And here's what it says on the cover. It starts out with the word more. More. If there's a single word that summarizes American hopes and obsessions, that's it. More. More money, more success, more luxuries, more gizmos. One of my new favorite words. We live for more. Our next raise, our next house, and the things we already have, however wonderful they are, then pale in comparison to the things we still might get. The hunger for more has turned from appetite to addiction. Success lost all reference to accomplishment and is now described solely in terms of money. lifestyle defined as the sum total of the things one bought seems to take precedence over life itself. Why did it happen? How did it happen? Those are great questions. Well, the Bible has one single sentence that answers both those questions. Comes from Proverbs 27:20. Human desires, underline those two words. Human desires are like the world of the dead. There is always room for more. The culprit lies within me, what the Bible describes as human desires. Why do I always want more? Well, I think that there are three misconceptions in our current culture that sort of play into these desires and sort of rev them up. The first one is the belief, having more things will make me happy. Having more things will make me happy. Of course, advertising, marketing really focuses on this one. Car ads. I remember there was one car ad that came out a while ago. It said, you can buy happiness. Really? Is that all it takes? You mean I've been living all these years and if I had just bought, would have had it. Chevrolet had this ad a few years ago. Makes you feel good inside. You know, I've been in a lot of Chevrolets. That's never been my experience. Just a personal word there. That's a stretch on that one. Ecclesiastes 5 says, he who loves money shall never have enough. Problem is not money. The problem is loving money. The bad guy is not money. The problem is inside, loving money. Shall never have enough. The foolishness of thinking that wealth brings happiness. The more you have, the more you spend. Sound familiar? Look at your family budget. Think about what you used to make, say, 10, 15 years ago, what you're making now. Think about how much more you're making. Anybody differently on the edge than you were back then? What we make, we spend. You know, the problem with things is that you do feel good for a short time. It is nice to have something new or something upgraded. The problem with it is it's only temporary. The luster fades over time. Remember this time last year? The things you just had to have for Christmas? You were hoping your spouse or your family members would get you for Christmas? I don't either. Something happened to that wish list of a year ago and the excitement of opening up those gifts. Luster has faded. Andy Rooney said, having enough is nowhere near as much fun as I thought it was going to be when I didn't have any. Pretty good statement. Having enough is nowhere near as much fun as I thought it was going to be when I didn't have any. Having more things will make me happy. First misconception. Second misconception. Having more things will make me important. Having more things will make me important. I think this one is sort of the headliner on this one. Is Lifestyles of the Rich and Tacky. Because that show is fundamentally run on one value. I am what I own. I am what I own. My valuables determine my value. That is the hidden and not so hidden message on that show. And we watch that show and we just get sucked in to that particular misconception. Jesus said, be on your guard against greed in any shape or form. For a man's real life in no way depends on the number of his possessions. You know, we get all wigged out when one of our neighbors upgrades, you know, and they do this huge remodel, and we think, oh, man, what about me? Of course, what the Jones down the street don't tell anybody is that they are now on the third time they've had to refinance their mortgage in order to do that. Keeping up with the Jones is not a very good idea in terms of handling your money. When I think about this, I often think about what one pastor used to say. We buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't even like. That's this one. Having more things will make me more important. You cannot and should not confuse your net worth with your self-worth. Third misconception. Having more things will make me secure. Having more things will make me secure. Love this political cartoon. Museum of Financial History. And here's the great bull from Merrill Lynch. Recent acquisition from Merrill Lynch. And the little boy looks up at the night watchman and says, "Gosh, mister, for the new night watchman, you sure do know a lot about this place." He says, "I used to work for Lehman Brothers." I don't know if there's any term more preposterous than the term financial independence. You can be financially independent at any given moment, but the idea that that's going to last on the rest of your life, you're skating on some pretty thin ice. You know, it's one of the funny things about money is the more you have, the easier it is to feel more insecure about it. You've got more to insure, more to upkeep, more to repair, more to protect from thieves. I can tell you at the Gatchel household, I never worry about how thick the barnacles are going to get on the hull of my yacht. Don't have a yacht. I never worry if moths are going to destroy Mindy's full-length mink coat or if thieves are going to break in and steal it. I never worry if somebody is going to steal my car. I'm more tempted to leave it unlocked in public places than I am to lock it. And it's been a long, long time since I've worried about getting another ding in the side door. Those are worries I just don't have. The misconception, having more things will make me more secure. Proverbs says, "The rich man thinks of his wealth as an impregnable defense, a high wall of safety." What a dreamer. What a dreamer. And on the back side, inside of your handout, be wise enough not to wear yourself out trying to get rich. Your money can be gone in a flash. You've had an opportunity to see that verse in living color the last couple weeks. Now, what's the truth? The truth is, real security can only be based on that which cannot be taken away. Real security can only be based on that which cannot be taken away. The converse of that, you base your security on things that can be taken away, you just ask yourself for a whole lot of stress and anxiety. We can lose everything we own tomorrow in an earthquake or medical costs. There are all kinds of ways to lose things that we think about bring us financial security. Job said, "If I have put my trust in money, if my happiness depends on wealth, it would mean I have denied the God of heaven." You know, some people have even had to learn the lesson that you can even lose family members. Even having family members does not bring me security. Okay, three misconceptions. Now, I'd like to talk about four things. How to break the grip of materialism that lies within our heart. And there are four things I'd like to mention today. Number one, resist comparing what I have to others. Resist comparing what I have to others. 2 Corinthians says, "We do not dare classify or compare ourselves. It is not wise." One version says, "It is foolish to compare myself to somebody else." It's a foolish thing to do. There was a study done of housewives in Muncie, Indiana years ago. And they went and surveyed these women, asked some questions to find out why they went back to work, even though most of them didn't need to make ends meet. And the number one reason that they found why the highest percentage of women that went back to work when they didn't need to was so they could buy things that would be the envy of others. Interesting. Interesting. Resist comparing what I have to others. You buy a gizmo for yourself. You love that gizmo. And for about a month or two, that gizmo is one of the finest things you've had. It's pretty impressive to own that gizmo. course, what you don't realize is that the marketing people who manufacture gizmos know that in a couple months, the luster on that gizmo is going to fade. But you know what they've already got prepared for you? Gizmo number two. It's been on the press long before they pushed out gizmo number one. Because they know that over time, our thirst for more is going to dive in. And if gizmo one was so good, think about what the extra features gizmo two has. I have to have gizmo two. Paul said to Timothy, when we long to be rich, it is not wrong to be rich. It is not wrong to be rich. The operative word there is the word long in the heart. When we long to be rich, we are a prey to temptation. We get trapped into all sorts of foolish and dangerous ambitions which eventually plunge us into ruin. Money is neither good nor bad. Money is neutral. It's how we make money, how we spend money, how we use money that makes it either good or bad. Money in itself is neutral. When zoos want to get more monkeys for the monkey cage at the zoos, they have an ingenious way of trapping monkeys. Think about that. How would you trap a monkey? It's always up in the trees and flying through the trees, all that jungle. How would you trap monkeys? Well, what they found is they take coconuts. They take one end of the coconut and they bore out a hole in it and then hollow it out inside and then put some sweet-smelling candy inside that coconut shell. Then they attach a chain to the coconut and attach the chain around the tree. And all they have to do is put all kinds of coconuts out there on the floor of the jungle and just leave for a while. And when they come back, they've got more than enough monkeys. You know how they trap these monkeys with that coconut? The monkey smells the candy. He comes down, sniffs inside, he puts his paw into the coconut, grabs the candy, and now he can't get his hand back out of the coconut. All the zoo people need to do, or the people that collect the monkeys, is come by and undo the chain from the tree and take them off. Because the monkey does not know enough to let go of what is he's clutching in his hand. Sounds like a parable for today. Trapped by our own desire for more, unwilling to let go, even if we are going to be trapped into our own jail of debt. I often think that, you know, we talk about possessions as if they are ours. I often wonder how much we are possessed by our possessions. We talk about what we own. And often see people, when I think of so many people, I think their possessions own them. They are not owners. They are the owned. And then sometimes, you know, you see, this is really sad, where somebody comes into a lot of money, and all of a sudden they change into somebody different. You guys seen that? I thought about one guy who won the lottery. He called home, he said, "Hey, honey, we just won $40 million in the lottery. Get out the suitcases and start packing." She said, "Well, should I warm clothes or cold clothes?" He said, "Doesn't matter. I just want you out of the house by the time I get home." Resist comparing what I have to others. Number two. Rejoice in what I do have. Rejoice in what I do have. Ecclesiastes says, "It is better to be satisfied with what you have than to be always wanting something else." You know, it's also a lot cheaper that way. Think about this. If I have a $350,000 house, if I buy a $700,000 house, will that make me twice as happy? Rejoice in what I have. One of my favorite little phrases when I think about this particular aspect of money, and this is definitely in play at the Gatchel House, at least among some of us. Use it up. Wear it out. Make it do. Do without. Use it up. Wear it out. Make it do. Do without. Use it up. Wear it out. Make it do. Do without. Use it up. Wear it out. Make it do, do without. That'll save you a lot of money. Just by those four little phrases. Rejoice in what I do have. Be thankful for what I have. Hebrews says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. That is not an easy thing to do with all the ads running around on TV and radio and even at the movies. Newspapers, magazines, internet. Number three, return the first 10% of what you make back to God. Return the first 10% of what you make back to God. Moses writes in Deuteronomy, a very important principle. He says, the purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first in your lives. God does not need money. The scripture is clear about that. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. He does not need money. Money is not for his benefit. Giving is not for his benefit. Giving is for our benefit. I think giving is probably the chief antidote to materialism for us. You know, as Christians, any of us can say, God's first in my life. We can all say that. Once you've been around the Bible a while, you've been around church a while, it's kind of an easy thing to say, yeah, I want Christ to be first in my life. But I think money is one of those tests to see, really, is he really first in my life? Or another way of saying it is, you get a chance to see how close you are to that being true in a tangible way. Money really determines or shows kind of what your real priorities in life are, what's really important to you. If you had to live on less in order to do what God says, would you do that? Now, again, if you look at me, unfortunately, well, I guess fortunately, I can live on less. And I've been doing that for a long time. I don't regret it. I feel like I'm a pretty contented fellow. I have a lot of peace in my life. Don't have to drive the Big Bang whiz car. Don't have to have gizmo 1, 2, or 3. Giving is not for God's benefit, it's for ours. Let's read these verses from Timothy together. 1 Timothy 6. Let's read them together. Tell those who are rich not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which will soon be gone. Tell them to use their money to do good. Now let's continue on. They should give happily to those in need, always being ready to share with others whatever God has given them. And one more. By doing this, they will store up for the real treasure for themselves in heaven. It is the only safe investment for eternity. You know, we live our lives as if all of this money is for these whatever years we have, 60, 70, or 80 years. We are so short-sighted. We are immortal creatures. And Jesus is very clear, for those who give, whenever you give, you're not just making an investment here, you are making an investment in eternity that you are going to enjoy for a long, long, long time. We have our trinkets, you know, we call them treasures here. But after a while, they put you in the coffin, they're not going to mean all that much to you. But you have a chance to enjoy what you give for a long, long time. The antidote to materialism, I think, is giving. Number four, last thing, is refocus on permanent values. Refocus on permanent values. Paul writes in Colossians, set your mind on things above, not on earthly things. I will tell you that I give not out of because I have such a philanthropic heart. There are some self-centered reasons to my giving. We just read some of them in 1 Timothy 6. I look forward to enjoying the fruits of my giving. Enjoying that treasure. Enjoying that investment and the fruits of that investment. And that's okay to do. That's not a wrong thing to do. It's not wrong to anticipate that you do something well and it's rewarded. Yesterday we had John's team and I'm assistant coach on his team. We were 3-3. Lost our first three games. We won our last three. The kids are coming. You're going to love this. You probably already know. won our next three. Yesterday we played the number one team in the league, and they're undefeated, had not been defeated yet. Before the game, we always tell the kids, if we win, you can dump all the cold water and all the juice on Coach John and Coach Seth, which they're delighted to do. Yesterday, if we beat the first place team, not only do you get to pour all the water and all the cold drink stuff on Coach John and Coach Seth, but Coach John and Seth are bringing you ices to practice next Wednesday. You should have seen those kids jumping up and down, talking about each other, you know. And I mean, it was electric. And they beat that team 2-0. First place team, undefeated. Yeah. Was it wrong for us to give them an incentive of ices? No, of course not. You should have seen those kids when that final whistle blew. They came running off the field, some of them jumping up and down. Some of them because they'd beaten the first place team, some of them because they knew they were getting ices. The anticipation of future reward that those kids experienced yesterday is the same thing, the same anticipation we have about giving. Anticipation of future reward, great investment, treasure. Jesus said in Matthew 13:22, "The man who hears the message but allows the cares of this world and his longing for money choke out God's word, does less and less for God." When we focus more on what we live on than what we live for, we violate this principle of focusing on permanent values. James Dobson wrote, "I have concluded that the accumulation of wealth, even if I could achieve it, is an insufficient reason for living. When I reach the end of my days, I must look back on something more meaningful than the pursuit of houses, lands, and machines. Nor is fame of any lasting benefit. I will consider my earthly existence to have been wasted unless I can recall a loving family, consistent investment in the lives of people, and an earnest attempt to serve God who made me." That's real living. That's real living. For those of you who have been around Pacific more than a couple years, this story will be familiar to you. We used to have a couple in our church, Robert and Debbie Hall, and they had to move to Tennessee a couple years ago. They have five daughters now. Back when they had three daughters, and they would tell you this story, and they'd given me permission to tell the story, their marriage hit the wall. A sudden, drastic crisis kind of wall. And I remember getting a call from her one night at home. She was in tears, and it sounded like the whole thing was completely done. And during the next few weeks, both of them were sort of scrambling to try to put things back together again. He had a really good job at Nissan, one of those kind of upper echelon, moving into the top executive kinds of jobs. And during that time, he told me that the culture, the executive culture at Nissan, was that the junior executives worked until at least 7 p.m. And then the next up till about 8 p.m. And the senior people didn't leave till about 9 p.m. or later. And his boss was putting pressure on him to move into that 7 o'clock category. He was working till about 6 o'clock at the time. He had a long talk with Debbie. The two of them made a decision, and he went to work on a Monday. I'll never forget this. He announced it to our Friday night small group, to the guys. Went in Monday and sat down with his boss and said, "I've decided that my wife and my kids are more important than my career." And climbing up the ladder. "I'm still going to do quality work. I'm going to get my job done. It's going to be the same quality. But I'm going to leave here every day at 5. His boss was shocked. And he said, "Well, you know, that's a career-limiting decision," which I found out during this conversation that that's a well-known phrase out in the marketplace. "You know, that's a career-limiting decision." And he said, "Yes, I do." He said, "You'll probably never move above the job you have right now." He said, "I know." He left at 5 o'clock on that Monday. And Tuesday, he left at 5 o'clock. and Wednesday left at 5 o'clock. He told our small group, he's told many of you, my relationship with Debbie and my girls is more important than that ladder or the status that comes with that ladder. Now they have 5 girls. And for probably all of you that know them, you might give up virtually everything you have if you could have a family like theirs. In the early years of our church, we were meeting at the Boys and Girls Club. And I don't know if you guys were around. Were you around during the rickety piano days? That old piano at the Boys and Girls Club? You remember that? Old rickety piano. And we had a guy who was about 35 years old. His name was Terry. He came into church one day. He was not a Christian, but he was kind of checking this whole Christian thing out. It was pretty intriguing to him. Had a wife and a couple kids. And I did a message something like this that we're doing today. And he came up after the service and he said, "Hey, Seth, is there anything we need around here?" We were renting at the Boys and Girls. Have any of you been to the Boys and Girls Club? It's a nice place to play basketball. You don't really want to have church there. Anything we need? First thing I thought about was that rickety old piano that Jennifer Deere was playing. She had not played since a kid. And like 20 years later, she's trying to relearn the piano. Nothing like a novice piano player and that rickety old piano. I said, you know, we really could use a keyboard around here, a really nice keyboard. He went out that afternoon and bought a keyboard for the church. What I found out later was he had woken up that morning with the idea of going to church, and in the afternoon he had a certain amount of money set aside that he was going to buy for a particular man toy. And after getting this thing about permanent values and making an investment, building a treasure that you'll enjoy through all eternity, he decided he was going to do that, and he did that. Now, what he did not think about was coming the next week, sitting next to his wife, and having the satisfaction of knowing she knew what he was going to buy with that money. And instead, he bought that keyboard. And his 2 kids had a chance to hear that keyboard every week. And when the question came up, hey, what happened to the old piano? How do we get that keyboard? That was a pretty cool thing for him to be able to say. It said something to his kids about permanent values, as opposed to if he just gone out and bought himself a man toy. Resisting materialism, trying to defeat the spending spree. There are 4 things that I want you to think about that the Bible talks about. Resist comparing what you have to others. Rejoice in what you have. Be thankful for what God has given. Return the first 10% to God and refocus on permanent values. Let's pray together. Father, we are so tricked by not just Madison Avenue and not just by Satan and his desire to pull us into all kinds of things, but we are also tricked by our own desires within us into thinking what will make us be important and what will help us feel secure and what will help us feel loved and what will help us be happy. And we just get on that treadmill that seems to be going faster and faster and faster. And without knowing it, we become a monkey with our hand deep into that coconut, with our fist tight around things. Not just our fist, but our heart. Father, during this time in the season of our country's life, with our economy the way it is, what an opportunity to take this bull by the horn and to do something about those desires inside, that materialism that lurks in our hearts. And you have clearly spelled out 4 things we've looked at today that we can do. You desire to use what's happening in our country, even the economy, at the life of the individual, at the level of the life of each of us. Lord, this past week, I often thought that about people that we try to fill an empty hole inside with money or things. And that ultimately, materialism is really a spiritual issue. Because that hole can only be filled by you being first place in our lives. Where we then experience peace and a freedom from worry and anxiety about finances and about things and dings in the side of our car. Would you help us to put you first in our lives? Your rightful place as the Lord of the universe, our Creator. We submit ourselves to you. And Lord, we ask you to just take your word that we've looked at today, principles of your word. And for each one of us here, help us to apply whatever it is we need to apply. Help us to move towards a freedom in our hearts from materialism. Help us to be financially free.